David's legacy. This is King David, the second king, but probably the most significant king in the life of the nation of Israel. But he lived and reigned about 1,000 years before Jesus Christ appeared upon the earth. But he's always been known as the king to look for. And in fact, Jesus himself is referred to as king from David's line. So actually, any study of David is worthwhile. But what about us in the 21st century? What about us with our families? What is it that we can glean? And so the question is, at the end of his life, which is where we are now, what was his legacy? What did he leave? What did he pass on? Now, every one of us in some way leaves a legacy. It's either I'm glad they've gone, or I'm very grateful for the things that they did in their life. In some way, they've influenced me. What sort of legacy? I have to say that in the last year, Christine and I have been blessed to receive items or money in a will. So we've been in receipt of a bequest. And sometimes we hear the word legacy used in someone is leaving you something. I must confess to you this little story about a man who received a legacy was very interesting to me. There was a man who received a legacy from a particular person that he'd had contact with many years before. And this legacy arrived as a parcel, quite a large parcel, to his house. And he opened the parcel and there was a letter saying, I leave these two items to you because of our friendship. Well, the man looked at it, these two items, and he was amazed. He said that there is a picture here, a painting, and that there was a violin. And he thought to himself, goodness me, fancy getting these. But he then began to think, I wonder if they're worth much. So not being up on paintings or violins, he decided to go and have them assessed. To which case the assessor contacted him a few days later and said, oh, I need to tell you, there's some good news. He said, we've discovered that the two items that you gave to us, in fact, are items that were made by two people. One was Stradivarius, and the other one was Van Gogh. Well, you can imagine, this guy is doing hoops, you know. This is absolutely fantastic, isn't it? I mean, this has got to be millions. There was a little rider on the bottom that it said, there is just one thing, and that is Van Gogh was not good at making violins. And Stradivarius couldn't paint. And I tell you that, not just to make you smile, but actually to tell you that although people say the great King David, the truth of the matter was that he was faulty, like we all are. He was marred. So while he is renowned for being the great king of Israel, the simple fact of the matter is that he had faults, he had difficulties, and even in this last chapter, this last section of his life, we're introduced and reminded of his problems just as well as we are reminded of his strengths. And I love stories. So what I'm going to do now is to say to you, if you don't know what came before this reading that we had, then I'm going to fill you in with the story so that, in fact, it might even make more sense. And the truth of the matter is that David is really now on his deathbed. And so Israel is in crisis. And so the first slide that you need to see is David in bed, which is a bit of a good place to start, isn't it, really? But he's being attended to, not by his wife, but by a carer. Now, that actually seems quite 21st century, really, that although we care about our people, sometimes it's necessary to bring carers in. This lady's name was Abishag, and she was his carer. So she's doing all she can to make the last period of time more comfortable. Bit of a Macmillan nurse, isn't it, really? And that was fine. But while all this was going on in these last stages of his life, something else is happening which is not that helpful. And this is the story that you need to know, the backstory, if we're going to understand this little ceremony that took place with Solomon. Let me tell you what the backstory is. David had quite a few sons. The oldest surviving son was a person called Adonijah. Common, rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? You know, Adonijah. And Adonijah, oldest surviving son, decides that with his father just on the edge of his earthly life, that he wanted to be king. And so the fact of the matter is that he was going to arrange for himself to be king. Now you would probably say to me, well, actually that doesn't sound too bad really. After all, if he was the oldest surviving son, isn't that what happens? Well, we're more used to that today. I mean, we've still got the same queen that we've had for years and years. But there was an occasion when George VI died in 1952 and Elizabeth was over in Kenya on a Commonwealth tour and she gets news that her father has died. So she becomes the next queen almost automatically. She was the oldest of two girls. So there was no boys at the time. Sorry about the problems of sexism and all the rest of it, but that's how it was. And the truth is that she was made queen a year later, really, in 53. She is actually crowned king. Queen as well. I'll just throw those in down again just to keep you awake and make sure you're listening. Well, anyway, there's the situation. So we would, in this modern thing, say, well, what's wrong with Adonijah then? Surely that's what's happened. Only the problem was that in those days, it didn't happen like that. And I can tell you why we know it didn't happen like that. Because the very first king was Saul, and David was the second king. Now, if it happened like that, Saul, who had a son called Jonathan, a good friend of David, as a matter of fact, he would have been made king. But while Saul was still king, God, through the prophet Samuel, that's a kind of God's man, actually arranged for this shepherd boy, not even the oldest son of his father Jesse, to be anointed to be king while Saul was still king. You can imagine the trouble there. But it was a period of time where people were chosen to be the next successor, not automatically through the bloodline. So here we have the situation whereby David is dying. Oldest son, he's wanting to grasp the throne. So what does he do? He says, well, I've got to get the people on board with this. So he finds the high priest. Now, he was very significant in those days. You know, if the high priest was part of this, people would go along with it. And then what he also does is, just to double the strength, he then gets the head of the army. So he's got the high priest, that's Abiathar, and he's got the head of the army, and that's Joab, and he's saying, between these two, I've got it made. And so he then organises a ceremony, a celebration. Well, that was not what it was meant to be. And so what we then have to realise is that God steps in. Believe it or not, he steps in. Now, during David's life, as I said, he had some good things that went on, but there were some other things that were not considered that helpful. For example, he sees another man's wife, and that wife is called Bathsheba, and he thinks that she's great, and so she wants him. He wants her. And so consequently, he arranges for her husband to be killed. This is this great king. So, you know, we must be realistic about this. There were things in his life that weren't right. And Nathan, the prophet, he was saying to him, this is not the behaviour that we expect. Now, you need to confess that if you're going to press on with God. Well, he was a man who loved God, and although he made mistakes, and so he confessed his sin. So Nathan was a good friend to him. We always need good friends who don't just tell us what we want to hear, but actually someone will tell it as it is. They're the best friends, actually, because they are of concern for us. I hope you've got some. People that will actually tell it as it is and not just tell you what you want to hear. So Nathan was one of those people. And what does he do? Well, he goes and he has to explain that what's going on with this Adonijah is not really on. Now, let me just say something to you here. There's a little passage in the Bible that Adonijah would have really been aware of, but chose to ignore it. And the summary of it is in 1 Chronicles 22, verses 6 to 13. Perhaps we can put it up on the screen, yeah? It's this, and this is David calling for his son Solomon. He called for his son Solomon and charged him to build a house for the Lord, the God of Israel. What that means is the temple. And David said to Solomon, my son, I had it in my heart to build a house for the name of the Lord my God. But this word of the Lord came to me, you have shed much blood and have fought many wars. You are not to build a house for my name because you have shed much blood on the earth in my sight. But you will have a son who will be a man of peace and rest, and I will give him rest from all the enemies on every side. His name will be Solomon, and I will grant Israel peace and quiet during his reign. He is the one who will build a house for my name. But where we're at here is, even though this man Adonijah wanted to seek the throne for himself, it was well known that God had already decided that the son of Bathsheba would be the next king, and his name is Solomon. And the reason we are told as to why that would be, it's because David was a warrior king, and a warrior king made sure that the whole of the nation was prevented from being attacked from other nations. And so David's legacy was to bring the kingdom, the united kingdom. That's what it was, because it later broke up into two parts. The united kingdom was handed over to Solomon. That's one of the big things that David brought as his legacy, a united kingdom. But God said, but when it comes to the temple being built, even though it's in your heart to do it, it is not for you to do. And the reason was because actually Solomon was to be a very different king, a man of peace, a man of peace. Do you know, the name Solomon comes from the root Hebrew word shalom. And shalom means peace and wholeness. So the fact of the matter was that God had decided that this was to be a different season with a different king and a different way of ruling, and it would be peace. And it did have a long-standing peace. We've got the wisdom things that Solomon provided. So Nathan, this advisor to David, he says, we've got to stop what Adonijah's doing. So what does he do? He goes to Bathsheba, and says, David made you a promise. And what was that promise? The promise was, your son will go to the throne. So Nathan speaks to Bathsheba. Bathsheba then goes to King David. So there they all are. There's Bathsheba, there's Nathan, there's Abishag looking after him as the carer and saying to David, we've got a problem here. Your old son is causing a lot of bother. But actually, you've already said to Bathsheba, you know that your son will be king. So Bathsheba and David, they get together. And this is what I find absolutely amazing. David, for all of his frailty, could have said, oh, don't bother me with all this. But as sharp as a razor, he said, no, God's will must be done before I breathe my last breath. God's will must be done before I breathe my last breath. And he says, this is what we're going to do. Even though I am still the king, you make him the king. People have said, haven't they, will Queen Elizabeth abdicate in favour of Charles because she's 90 odd? And I'm not so sure she will. I've got this feeling she'll go right the way through. I think unless she's really physically prevented, I think she will. And I'll tell you why, because I think she made that promise, that vow. So you can all tell me I'm wrong in life, but I just have a feeling that she will see it through. Just like David, you know, God's will must be done here. But what he did, in fact, was to make Solomon king with him. So he became co-regent with him and said, well, you still can sit on my throne. At this moment in time, the two are there. But they want a little bit of a gathering and they want it done properly. So Zadok the priest is brought in, and the bodyguard for David, Benaiah, he's brought in as well as Nathan. It's almost like a parallel of what's going on with the one that's trying to take it, and then there's this thing that's actually going on at this end. It's a remarkable story. What's even more remarkable is that David says, put him on my mule and take him to this place to become king. Did it remind you of the story of Jesus going on a foal of a donkey? We always think of horses, war horses for kings and so on. And it says of Jesus, you know, of David's line. And this action of Solomon being made king by going on the mule. And we see Jesus coming in like that. Attention to detail that God wanted to happen. Amazing. All done by this man in the last stages of his life. And he is crowned king. And the very last thing that he says to Solomon is, Solomon, you may be king of this united kingdom, but put God first. Put God first. I've made mistakes, but I've always loved God. Put God first, and you will retain the united kingdom. And I thought to myself, do you know what? If we want a united kingdom, folks, we've got to put God first. But over the years, we've kind of not. And at the end of Solomon's life, just to finish the story off, he brought in all sorts of stuff, altars to unknown gods and all sorts of rubbish. Honestly. And at that point, the kingdom divided. See, I think we're in a divided kingdom. So the question is this so irrelevant as to actually be asking the question, is it because we're not putting God first, but we've produced a secular humanism? Or should we begin to look back again and say, God, what have you got in store? And let's put you first. The legacy of David was that he failed, but he was forgiven because he confessed and sought to put God first. And he passed that on to Solomon. And when Jesus came, he did a lot for us, as we've already heard. But the risen Jesus, before he left earth, said this: go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age.